Tathe Vasudevayam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 3, Text 22. Evam bruvanam pitaram smayamana suci smita vachatata jamata tavaisya bhrigu nandanaha evam bruvanam pitaram Smayamana suci smita vachatata jamata tavaisya bhrigu nandanaha evam bruvanam pitaram smayamana suci smita Vachatata jamata tavaisya bhrigu nandanaha. Let's chant. Ladies, please.
Sutata Samata. Nandaha.
Evam, in this way, Bruvanam, who was talking and chastising her, Pitaram, unto her father, Smayamana, smiling, because she was chaste, Shuchi Smita, laughingly, Uvacha, replied, Tata, O my dear father, Jammata, son-in-law, Tava, your, Eshaha, this young man, Bhrigu Nandanaha, is Chayavana Muni, and no one else. So the translation continues from yesterday. Shukanya, however, being very proud of her chastity, smiled upon hearing the rebukes of her father. She smilingly told him, My dear father, this young man by my side is your actual son-in-law, the great sage Chyavana, who was born in the family of Bhrigu. So I'm going to recap much of this story. It's not that long, so that this becomes more understandable when we actually see what has happened, to make him accuse her of being very unchaste. It's actually a bit humorous, and that's why she's laughing. So, purport by Srila Prabhupada. Although the father chastised the daughter, assuming that she had accepted another husband. See, Chyavana Muni looked like an old 90-year-old man when she first met him. He was stooped over. He had lines in his face. His skin was hanging. His hands were quivering. He had all the indications or symptoms of a very elderly person. He also was invalid. He had some disorders in his body. So this was the man that her father knew. And now she's seeing him standing with this young, attractive, virile, vigorous young man, which is completely opposed to Vedic culture. I mean, this young girl should be with her elderly or old grandfatherly husband. And here she's standing with this young man. Of course, that gets revealed in just a few more moments. But she's smiling because her old, or very old husband, her, who looked like, as I said, a grandfather or a great-grandfather, he's been transformed physically by the Ashvini Kumaras, who are the physicians in the heavenly world. And they know how to make you look young again. So they knew this ability. And at some point, when they appear, and they appear for a purpose, they want something. And they're willing to give something to get what they want. So they have transformed Chyavana Muni from an old codger into a young vigor. So let me just begin the story where it starts out. Originally starts out with... I thought it was the purpose. Yeah, I just did. I've now been transformed into a young man, as she was very proud of her chastity, and thus she smiled as she talked with her father. Didn't I just do that? Or didn't... Oh, okay. Thank you. Although the father chastised the daughter, assuming that she had accepted another husband, the daughter knew that she was completely honest and chaste, and therefore she was smiling. When she explained that her husband, Shyamalamuni, had now been transformed into a young man, she was very proud of her chastity, and thus she smiled as she talked with her father. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So this story begins when King Sharyati decides to go to visit the ashram of Shyamalamuni. Shyamalamuni is known to be a very advanced soul, especially advanced for the austerities that he has practiced and the powers that he has gained through that practice. So it's a blessed event to enter the ashram or even the environs of an ashram of a great teacher, because there are blessings to be obtained, to be derived, since the whole environment is surcharged with the spiritual vibrations of that particular sage. So the king and many of his soldiers, they come and they visit, and he also brings along his daughter, Princess Sukanya, and they go there. And the men, of course, are talking about, because they're soldiers, they talk about battles, and they talk about weapons and swords and knives and mystical weapons and things of that sort. That's the normal thing that soldiers tend to talk about. And the girls, they were about 13 or 14. The actual age is not given, but that's about, from the description, it sounds to be. So the girls, they go out and they go playing, picking fruits and throwing the fruits and just doing frolicsome and frivolous types of activities. And they're in a friendship mood, a playful mood. And they're not very serious at this particular point. And actually, that's the kind of mood they're in. And so what happens is in the course of playing, picking fruits and throwing them and so forth, Sukanya, she looks down into the ground and she sees these two orbs or holes, and these two holes are glowing. It's like two flashlights, you know, shining through the holes, and she's wondering, what is this? Because it's quite abnormal, quite unnatural to walk by the earth and to see two holes glowing. So she takes a thorn, okay? And she wants to just see what it is. You know, is it alive? Is it dead? What is it? So she takes the thorn, she pokes it, and then she pokes the other one. Well, it turns out it happens to be the eyes of Shyamalamuni, and he's doing some austerity, you know, under the earth. And blood starts to come, and it comes, and it goes, you know, out of the eyes and down, and she sees what she's done. Oh, it's terrible. The wind-up or the upshot of that was that shortly after, while they're still there, none of the soldiers are able to evacuate their bowels or their kidneys. In other words, they can't pass water, they can't pass stool. She committed an offense. And when an offense is committed, even inadvertently or unknowingly, in a holy person's environment or holy person's ashram, what happens often is that a person gets instant karma or instant effect. So the soldiers, of course, are holding their gut, you know, and they want to go and they can't go because he's obstructed it. I mean, it's kind of comical and it's also kind of tragic. So the father looks and he sees everybody kind of in a moaning in a painful situation. And he says, somebody has made an offense to Chavanamuni. Who has made this offense? So she's looking around and Sukanya says, well, maybe I did. He says, well, what did you do? And she told him exactly what I just mentioned. She poked the eyes. She said, oh, this was terrible. She said, well, I didn't know it was a human being under there. She said, all I saw is these two glowing lights coming out, those holes. He said, well, let us go. We'll go there and we'll offer an apology. And by so doing, hopefully, he'll remedy this situation because it's terrible. These men, if they stay in that condition, they can just die in their own poisons. So we have to stop that because I won't have much of an army or not too many generals left if they just die in their own poisons. So anyway, they go there and Chavana, he's out of the earth. He's come out, you know, and he's rubbing his eyes and so. And he said, I want to report something, O sage. First of all, he offers his obeisances to him, and she also bows down. And he says, I'm very, very sorry for what has happened. My daughter, inadvertently, unknowingly, she poked your eyes, and this is an offense. And we're very sorry that this has occurred, and we beg you to accept our apology, and we beg for your forgiveness so that she will be free of that, you know, karmic reaction, and so that hopefully you will not curse us for doing what she has done. So he begins to mildly smile. Remember, he's got these, you know, dreadlocks, you know, kind of, what do they call, like ropes of hair. And he does not look like, you know, Tom Cruise or some of these other Hollywood handsome men. So he looks at it, and he looks at this young girl who's about 14, 13. And she's very pretty, very beautiful, very nicely put together. And then he kind of looks at her, and he says, is she married? He said, no, not married. Their father is immediately getting the jitters because is he going to ask for my daughter? I mean, he had big plans for his daughter to marry her to a nice, stout-hearted warrior, you know, with all the trimmings of muscles and good character and everything. So he said, all right, I want to take her as my wife. So what could he do? All right, I offer her to you in charity. She's yours. Now, the interesting thing about this is that how Sukanya, how she responded to this. An ordinary materialistic woman would say, Father, what are you doing? How can you do this to me? You're wrecking and ruining my life. I have no life now. Look at this old geezer. He's just hardly can stand up. And you're marrying me to him? That's a typical, ordinary, materialistic type of reaction. But she doesn't react that way. She's very sober. She's very calm. Very controlled. Doesn't even whimper. Doesn't say, all right, I'll tolerate it. Doesn't even come out with not a grumble from her. So father leaves, and before he left, he said, please take very good care of the sage. And she says, yes, father, I will do that. So her position is that she's accepted this as her karmic reaction, so to speak. She has so much philosophical understanding that she takes this to be as something that she deserves, that something she created in her past, which has made her eligible or qualified to receive a husband that old. And generally in Vedic culture, if a young woman has to marry a very elderly man, it's not considered the best of karma. Maybe some of you remember that Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Lord Chaitanya, he was no more than about 6 years old, and he would go down to the bathing ghats. And the little girls who were there, 5 and 6 year old girls, they would bring some sweets which they would offer to Mother Ganga. Okay? So Lord Chaitanya would just grab the sweets. And they would say, what are you doing, Nimai? These are for Mother Ganga. He says, no, you should give them to me. He said, why should we give them to you? Because I'm in charge. What do you mean you're in charge? He says, if you offer them to me, I guarantee you, you will get good husbands, young husbands, strong husbands. But if you don't offer these to me, not only will you get old husbands, but you will all marry a man who has five other wives along with you. So, give me the sweets. Well, the little girls were a little bit, they didn't know what to think. Does he really have these powers? This Lord Chaitanya, you know. And he was talking very strongly. So they decided better not to take a chance. Give him the cakes, give him the sweets. So he began eating the sweets so that he wouldn't in any way curse them like that. But it was given reluctantly. So what I'm trying to bring out is that this is not considered the best of marriages for a young woman, that she should marry a man who's three or four times her age. Anyway, her position was that she treated him the way she would treat her father. Respectfully, thoughtfully, caringly, with honor. You know, preparing his food, preparing his meals, getting his water, helping him in his sacrifices. Never was there a growling, grousing, irritable word came from her mouth. She was like the perfect, ideal young woman. She was perfectly trained, and Srila Prabhupada makes a big thing out of this, that this is Vedic culture. And this is a woman who accepts her karmic reaction, and she's not going to say to her father, well, I don't care what you say, I'm going to go find my own man. She doesn't say that. She accepts this, knowing that there is some benefit to be obtained by yielding, by behaving, by obeying her father. And one of the great benefits is that a person who obeys the father is like obeying the Lord. And in such obedience generates and develops humility. You can't be humble unless you can obey someone. Humility is not merely bowing the head or paying obeisances or speaking in a very, very low voice. This has nothing to do with humility. Humility is the sense and the feeling of the greatness of God, and God has given me this father, and this father has married me to this man. Therefore, I will try my best to please my father. And by pleasing my father, I will also please this man. And if I please this man and I please my father, I will please the Supreme Lord. And if the Supreme Lord is pleased, then he will bestow upon me, he will bless me with joy, real happiness, which has nothing to do with the externals, with the tongue and the eyes and the ears and the nose and the skin. It is the happiness of the heart in which the super soul interacts with the soul and pours on the soul the pure joy of the super soul, and the soul then feels very, very inwardly happy. That inner happiness is the real, you might call it the real deal when it comes to true happiness. Everyone is looking for this, but they don't know where to find it. They're looking for permanent happiness, but it cannot be found, as we all know, in material things. Those things last for a while. You eat some ice cream and after a while it's flat. Or you take some mangoes, after a while you ate two or three of them, you don't want any more. You know, you hear some music, you hear it three, four, five times, after you don't want it. These, in other words, you have the happiness and then it's gone. And then we're looking for something else. And until we find that something else, we're in anxiety, we're in uncertainty. Sometimes the person, they want to go and see a movie and they're standing on a long movie line and it's their favorite actor playing in a very highly touted movie, and as the line is moving, you know, at the box office, paying, then just two or three persons in front, a sign goes up at the box office, sold out. I mean, they were just eager and dying and wanting to get into that theater to see their favorite, you know, hero on screen. So they'll now have to wait another 2.5 hours. And they weren't banking on that. So they become disgusted. They become sad. They become angry. These are the emotions that we get when we make love to sense pleasure, sense gratification, anger, irritability, anxiety, disgust. And then sometimes the anger turns into hostility. Person says to you, can you please tell me what the, do you have the right time? Yeah, I have the right time. Could you please give me the right time? No, I don't want to give you the right time. What are you going to do about it? So, well, excuse me, I'm sorry to bother you. You know, the person can become very irritable, and he just doesn't want to either cooperate, doesn't want to be friendly, doesn't want to be kind, doesn't want any of that, because you're upset, you're frustrated. And frustration is always followed by anger, and anger is sometimes followed by hostility and antagonism is sometimes followed by fights. And when we see the news, you know, the 6:30 news, or there's always a report of some brawl. Somebody got into a brawl at the bar, or somebody was driving and he cut somebody off. And then he gets into a road rage. Who are you cutting off? I'm cutting you off. Yeah, you're not going to cut me. And before you know it, he slams his car into the other car. Madness, insanity. So the point here is that Sukanya is anything but that. She's trained. She's cultured. She's learned how to control her mind, how to control her speech. And her only desire is to please her husband, knowing full well that it will please her father. And this is what she has been raised to do, to give pleasure to her father and her mother, of course, and anyone else elder in the family. So this goes on for a while. And then what happens is that the Ashvini Kumaras, they come, and they come to the ashram, and they actually want Shyavana Muni to perform a ceremony, a Somaras ceremony. And however, let me just say that the Ashvini Kumaras, they are not what we call full-fledged demigods. They are servants of demigods. For example, they are known as heavenly physicians. You know, they do Ayurveda. So if some of the demigods are not feeling well, they can prescribe different things. They're servants. So they are not allowed at the sacrifices to drink the somaras. Now, what is the somaras? It's a particular beverage. It's a drink. It's made out of a plant. And it's very, very sweet. It's not an intoxicant. And Srila Prabhupada makes this point using the very word intoxicant, not once, but at least 3 times in the purport that I had read, which I didn't write down here. So, but it's very sweet, and it's also very energizing. And most of all, is that one who takes it becomes free of all sinful reactions. So that's what Somaras is about. And all the demigods, they drink it at these particular sacrifices. But as mentioned, Ashvini Kumaras, they are two. They're twins. In fact, they were responsible for two of what we call the Pandavas. When Madri, who was one of Pandu's wives, she would call a demigod in order to have a child. So she called these two Ashvini Kumaras, and then two of persons whom we call the Pandavas, Nakula, and who's the other one? Starts with a K? Huh? Sahadev, yes. Nakula and Sahadev, they're born from Madri, and they are the children of the Ashvini Kumaras. And that's just a parenthetical remark to show you who they are and what they do. So anyway, they're not allowed to drink the Somaras. Now, I should mention that Shyamamuni is very pleased. He's very impressed. He's very much delighted with the kind of service that he's receiving from Princess Sukanya. And he wants to do something nice for her. Now, remember, she's a young woman and she's got a very old husband. What could be nice? How could he kind of repay her for all the nice service that he's receiving from her? So he says to the Ashwini Kumaras, "Can you make me look young like you?" And they say, "Yes, we can." They said, "Can we do it now?" "Yes, we can." So they said, "Come, there's a lake over there. We'll go into the lake, we'll plunge underwater, and when you come out, you look young as we do." So they go to the lake there, they plunge underwater, they come out of the water, and it looks like triplets. Ashwini Kumaras are twins, and Shyamamuni, he looks exactly like them. You can't tell the difference. So it's like the triplets. And so Sukanya, she approaches him. She doesn't know who's her husband. She can't figure it out because they all look alike externally. So as it was mentioned in the class yesterday by Devamrita Maharaj, she's not going to trust her own willfulness or her own hunch. She's going to do what she's learned to do from an early age, and that is you trust in a higher authority. So rather than just pick one, because it's not only the face she's interested in, she's also in love with the heart. Shyamamuni is a great sage. He has qualities, you know. He has attributes. He has love. He has abilities. He has powers. So he's not merely a pretty face. So she wants the man whom she is actually serving with love and whom she has felt love from. Of a spiritual nature, of course. So what happens was that one of the Ashwini Kumaras, he mentions this. He says that your husband is over here. So she felt very relieved of that. Now, the husband went over to her, and she was very pleased to see that now she had a man who looked no more than about 25 years of age. And the Kumara, the Ashwini Kumaras, they left. A short time later, the father of Sukanya arrives, and that is King Shariyati. So he sees, which is what this verse that we chanted today is about, he sees his daughter talking to this young man. And he looks at this. Where did he come from? And what is she doing with him? If she's going to talk to a young man, her husband has to be there. This cannot be done this way in a kind of fraternizing, impulsive way. That's why he says, "What is this unchaste manner that you're displaying yourself in? Why are you talking to this young man? What have you got to do with him? You're a married woman. You have no bill." You know, he gets real heavy with her. And that's why she starts smiling. And she's beginning to smile because he's all wrong, but he's all right. The philosophy he's uttering is completely correct, completely wrong, completely right, but it's not applied to the right person. So finally she says, as it says in the verse, she says that that he is my father. Excuse me, he is my husband. And he said, "How could he be your husband? Look, he looks like a young man." He said, "Well, the Ashwini Kumaras, they turned him into a young man." He said, "Well, that's wonderful." So everybody's happy. Father's now happy. The daughter has got a young man. She doesn't have to suffer for the rest of her life with some decrepit old invalid. And daughter is happy also. But as I mentioned, due to her training, she was ready to accept whatever her karma was. So then it turns out that the Ashwini Kumaras, they return. And they come back because they want Shyamamuni to perform a sacrifice. And the sacrifice has to do with the with that beverage, you know, with that drink, the soma ras. So they ask him if he'll perform the sacrifice, and he says he will. And he knows that they want to drink that soma ras, but that they can't. They're prohibited by the gods. He says, don't worry. I will. You've given me this youth. I will make sure that you get the soma ras. So what happens is he makes up this big pot of soma ras. And as soon as that happens, then the sacrifice is performed. And the demigods come and they see that the Muni is offering the soma ras to the Ashvini Kumaras. They say, stop, Indra says. Stop, don't do that. You have no right to take this. You're just a servant of the gods. So he's about to pulls out his thunderbolt, and he's going to hurl the thunderbolt at Shyavana Muni. And as he gets it into ready to get it into motion, he can't move his arm. Shyavana Muni, he paralyzes it. So it's a he can't move it left, right, any which way. He tries to use his own powers. He can't. Shyavana Muni is very, very powerful. So it's discussed and decided amongst the demigods that if Indra wants to be able to use his arm again, we're going to have to allow this the Ashvini Kumaras to drink the nectar and have the drink. So they do that, and they allow him to take the nectar or the soma ras, and he's allowed to do that. So this is a very interesting how all these different parts have worked out. How everyone eventually, it's like a quid pro quid. I give you this and I get this. This is not has nothing to do with pure loving devotional service. The only thing that was pure and loving and devotional is Sukanya's attitude towards her father, which is the way she would act towards the Lord. And we can all learn from this type of control that she had. She had control over her speech, control over her mind. She had a faithfulness, even though she was in an unpleasant, undesirable situation for a young woman. Nonetheless, she accepted this as her karma. She decided that she would just go along with it because God is everywhere. He sees everything. And he has obviously placed her in this position for her to gain, to learn something. And therefore she accepted that. Now we as devotees will be placed, and some of us have already been placed in situations and difficulties, trials, tribulations, which we didn't like, which our normal reaction might be irritability, or it might be, why this, Krishna? Can't you give me something better? Or something like that. Or maybe it didn't respond that way. But the important point is that the hand of God is in everything, and we are being tested every moment. How we speak, how we think, how we feel, how we express. And if we pass the test and we act indifferently towards some of these untoward, unfavorable, sometimes disgusting, sometimes unpleasant situations, then in a sense we're acting in a transcendental way, in the sense that this we're not allowing it to affect us. We're not allowing it to disturb us, to shake us, to rattle us. And when doing that, that becomes our habit. And therefore, slowly but surely, as we operate and act and work in the world, things don't affect us, even though we are acting in it, we're working in it, we're doing things in it. And we simply deal with the situations that have to be dealt with. But we don't allow them to disturb us and upset us. And that way we can keep our mind on Krishna. Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away, do it for me. But how are we going to do it for him if we can't remember him? If the mind is peaceful, the mind is calm, the mind is controlled, the mind is focused, then we can remember Krishna. Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, do it for me. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances, worship me. Always think of me. He says to Arjuna when they're on the battlefield, Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna at the same time. Perform your prescribed duty of fighting with your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me. You will come to me without a doubt. So the key emphasis in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita is to develop our love for God. And love for God is developed by thinking of Him, by remembering Him, by hearing about Him, by having exchanges and discussions about Him. All these things help us to become more and more Krishna conscious. And the more Krishna conscious we become, the more bliss, the more peace, the more ecstasy, the more strength, the more confidence, the more true, genuine, real happiness we develop. The happiness which comes from the connection, conscious connection of the soul with the Supreme Soul, the Super Soul. One who is not connected with the Supreme Soul in Krishna consciousness can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? This is Krishna, what he says. So we need to be not only connected, we're always connected to Krishna. We can never be disconnected. But to be consciously connected, to be remembering that I am part and parcel of Krishna, that Krishna is within you, within you, within you. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision. A learned Brahmin, a cow, an elephant, a dog, a dog eater. Where's the equality? He sees the super soul. And he also, experiencing himself as a soul, he also sees the soul and feels his relationship with all beings as being brothers or sisters. But the relationship is there because when he is offering anything, it goes to the soul and from the soul to the super soul. So he is always relating, connecting, and finding his relationship with the Supreme Lord and feeling happiness in all circumstances. So that is actually the secret. And this was the secret of how this Sukanya, she was able to maintain a peace. I didn't say she was an advanced, very advanced soul, but she was advanced enough to know not to get into a big argument with her father. She maintained, she accepted, she understood it, and was willing to go through it. Are there any questions? Comments? All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna.
Don't forget. Judge, how do you do it?